Well, hello all. Thank you for joining us. I'm excited to have Lisa Everett Anderson with us today. This topic's kind of near and dear to my own heart. I think it's a very good transition and an addition to I guess the pharmacy profession and education. So, and I'm sure Lisa will expand on that. But Lisa is a pharmacist and a certified clinical nutritionist. She has a passion for helping people achieve the reversal of disease and reclamation of their own health. She's the owner of O'Brien Pharmacy and the Kansas City Holistic Center in Mission, Kansas. She has contributed to several articles, quite impressive, a few books that she has written, and she is now serving as the president for the International and American Association of Clinical Nutritionists. Her bio goes on and on and on, quite impressive. And today, I thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So, can you explain what, or a little bit more about clinical nutrition and the IAACN?
My journey of the thing kind of started clear back in eighth grade. I started studying nutrition, which is really chemistry or biochemistry. But I was very interested in helping my grandfather with his health. And in so doing, I read all these diets and way of eating and all of that on top of the chemistry that I was, in advanced classes for that. So when you fast forward, so in high school, I basically by graduated became a vegan and raised my kids that way. I have three children. They're in their 40s now. My youngest is 33, but the other two are in their 40s. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I didn't vaccinate them in part because my doc said, those are for mothers who aren't breastfeeding, and my kids nursed until they were two and over two, and you've got antibodies. And besides, we recognize that something happens. We don't know what happens if we start vaccinating before the age of two, et cetera. So this is back in the 70s, mind you. So I never got around to it until they all got a round of vaccines, but just one round, and when they were five. And I don't know if it was just that or the way I raised them on a vegan diet, but I never had ear infections. My kids just weren't sick. I said vegan, I meant to say vegetarian because we did do some dairy. And my daughter Holly really liked dairy, yogurt, she called it. No, none of the rest of us ate that junk, but she would like that, and she was kind of honking. And I thought, oh, if we're going to need an antibiotic here, there's something wrong. So we went to an allergist who was one of the top, there were only three allergists in the country at that time. We made their allergy shots for them, and we dodged the allergy shot bullet by him saying, Lisa, come here. Oh, sorry. Lisa, come here. You were in medical school too, weren't you? Look down her throat. There was these white streaks running down the back of her throat. And he said to me, he was an ear, nose, and throat specialist. He said, there's nothing wrong with Holly that getting her off of dairy won't take care of. So we didn't have internet back then. And I started reading and reading. And I went, had to go to the library to do all that reading. I already had read much about dairy was bad for you. So I just got rid of it completely in the house, and she completely cleared up, and that was the end of it. And they've been that way ever since. High achievers, they take vitamins and so forth. So that was kind of the family story. But in the pharmacy, we were located in a medical building with 375 specialists. And I began to see that my dreams and what I thought my dad was able to accomplish as a pharmacist were not really coming true. We came out of school to stamp out disease and pestilence, but We weren't. We were just learning how to really manage conditions. There was very few things that we actually cured. And as we put our ears to the railroad tracks, the rumbles of the community were they didn't want to learn how to take two more medications more cleverly, you know, with grapefruit, without this, and on an empty stomach and whatever. And people were starting even back then in the 80s to add so many layers of medications on. I mean, look how many prescription drugs today that 40-year-olds are on average in our country. And we add that to their OTC Prilosec and their ibuprofen and Aleve, et cetera. So I went for training. I knew there had to be a better way. At that time, I was on the board of the American Holistic Medical Association. And I started hearing more conversations, not really much in the way of lectures, but conversations around nutritional medicine. And I became very interested in that and really launched into studying more biochemistry, understanding that a statin drug doesn't just stop the formation of CoQ10. Statin drugs stop the formation of geringerinol, which controls everything from serotonin to, you name it, iron, all kinds of things, you know, there in the liver. And that there was a reason that giving CoQ10 to a statin patient wasn't cutting the mustard. So with that formal education, I was already doing hormone consults. We were the first pharmacy to do bioidentical hormones back in the 60s. And that was with my dad and the OBGYNs that were there in that building. I started doing them right out of school in 76. So we were involved in those first studies using progesterone. And there were several studies going on at universities. One was KU with using progesterone suppositories in what we now call deficient luteal phase, or back then they called it habitual miscarriage, when women couldn't hang on to their babies because there wasn't enough progesterone. My mind was, well, why isn't there? And I was one of those people too then that suffered a postpartum depression with my second child, maybe probably a little with my first one. But by my second child, we actually figured it out. The only thing that was offered in the United States was, you know, tricyclic antidepressants. We didn't have Prozac. We didn't have all of that. And I was nursing. There was no way I was going to do that. So I started researching more about the use of progesterone, since we were already making it for those studies and whatnot. And it changed my life. So I was already doing that. But through that and through the study of PMS, I never did hormones in a vacuum. They were always with a high-powered multivitamin, a more complete approach to our biochemistry, running the electron transport chain, the Krebs cycle. And that came out of studying even our government statistics that 85% of Americans don't get enough B6 in a day to make their serotonin from 5-HTP or from 5-HTP from tryptophan, and then to get that to melatonin. That's not a Prozac deficiency. That is a B6 deficiency. Where there's a B6 deficiency, there's a deficiency in thiamine, riboflavin, pantothenic acid, all the Bs. And you remember, if you're old enough, back in the day, Letterly Laboratories made stress B vitamins. They didn't even recommend that you sell a B vitamin by itself. They were always sold together. And that made a huge difference in women's lives. I had no idea at the time, but we were treating and reversing fibromyalgia right and left. Fibromyalgia in my clinic is a 3-week deal. It's Krebs cycle. So in other words, we know mitochondrial dysfunction is our name for that nowadays, but it was Krebs cycle. And part of the Krebs cycle requires cholesterol and steroids made from cholesterol, not just thyroid, not just CoQ10, not just the B vitamins, but manganese is in the Krebs cycle. Magnesium runs the Krebs cycle. Oxygen runs the Krebs cycle. When you have fibromyalgia, you are, your muscle cells have 200 to 300 times more mitochondria than it's supposed to have. And you didn't have the wherewithal to run the original number of mitochondria. So now the muscle cells are screaming out, sending out substance P and hollering in pain. So I tell you, that was quite by accident. I just, you know, was trying to put back people's chemistry and at the same time diminish their toxic burden, which I began studying in environmental medicine my junior year in high school. So I took ecology and environmental medicine classes and found out that this in a junior in high school, that this thing called what, endometri, what, fibroids, barely knew we had a uterus, let alone an endometrium that could then, you know, proliferate and cause endometriosis, were due to primarily chlordane and the use of DDT. Those were new diagnoses. And that ones that had come out centuries before, they had identified to be caused by what we now call xenoestrogens, which includes the heavy metals that are have estrogenic activity, such as arsenic and cadmium. So we, with that, began to shift our focus. And we were a medical building pharmacy, but we moved out of that medical building. And our front end is only natural herbs, supplements, homeopathy. We treat the C. diff that is drug resistant. We treat the UTIs that are now drug resistant in women that, you know, maybe can't take hormones or whatever, with natural substances. And it's just been so gratifying. Your bottom line, yes, that will improve with this know-how. I think pharmacists are the most poised of all the medical personnel to pair a clinical nutrition education and practice alongside pharmacy practice, because we take more biochemistry than other professions, albeit I'm on adjunct faculty for 2 universities. We kind of are state line here in Kansas City. And these kids are not learning what I learned back in the 70s. They're not learning the basic sciences that we learned. So when they come here, we have to teach them quite a bit of that. They can't tell you what neuropeptides Wellbutrin is primarily working with, and they can't tell you how any neuropeptides are synthesized in the human biosystem. That's repugnant to me. I just, how can you help the body? It is how doctors are educated, to treat disease and not treat the human body, to look at what is missing here. Is it, you know, why are our hormones and our young women's running, our total or estradiol and estrone are running 100 on day 21, and our 20 virginal 20 year olds, they've never been on a birth control, but you know, what's going on? And they've got vulvodynia, they've got hair loss, they have stress and anxiety disorders. The kids today, well, if the CDC adopts the new recommendation, children today are going to have 102 vaccines by the time. What? And women, pregnant women, are hit with the multi-dose MMR vaccines that have 250 times the amount of mercury that the FDA deems as poisonous water, unpotable water. It's 50 times more mercury than a piece of swordfish or salmon has in it. And then they inject that into a pregnant woman. So we are dealing with a lot of toxic burden. And in a clinical nutrition program, you learn how to test for that and to get the results and to be able to show people. We do a provocative chelation, IV chelation. And if you can't do that in your pharmacy, that's fine. There are always physicians around to find someone who believes this way as you do. We'll do that provocative chelation. Maybe you compound that for them to do that IV. And then we collect their urine for 24 hours. And oh my goodness, you'll see what we see a lot of now is thallium coming out from all the contrast dyes. We see a lot of contrast dye coming in. We never saw that, before. A lot of arsenic and coarse lead is ubiquitous now, alongside the mercury and cadmium. And, aluminum is over the top, especially in children. Those are definitely from the vaccines. So we're facing those toxic burdens, and it's only by upregulating our biochemistry that we can begin to eliminate those and get rid of them. There are no drugs really to help us do that. You can give DMPS, you can give EDTA, but if you do not have the biochemical reactions in place that depend once again on the B vitamins or vitamin A, vitamin D, all the minerals that are involved in this exit strategy on a biochemical cellular level, then it's just going to shake loose and redistribute. So we have to put that in place before we do chelation therapies or, whatever. Even the acute poisonings are not responding in hospitals. People aren't responding like they used to because of the incredible nutrient deficiencies in our country, especially our country. Okay.
That was wonderful. But that's very true because I own a compounding pharmacy and we're not in depth. I mean, we do a lot of bioidentical hormones. And I always tell during my consults, we're always just worried about the incoming, right? Never about the detoxification processes. Same with you have these people, I want to do a detox. If you're not metabolically sound and you don't have the foundation already built, you're not going to detox. And it's just bothersome. You've got these drug nutrient depletions that are adding to it. You've got, you name it, and it's
Over
disgusting.
150 drugs, and some of which are in therapeutic doses in our drinking water. That's why we have a handbook on it now, that are not cleaned out at the treatment plants, but it can be dealt with. You can turn these conditions around in people, get their upregulate their biochemistry, their metabolic processes, but also their synthesis processes, their protein synthesis, their collagen synthesis. We are breaking down. I mean, this is the first generation that will not outlive its parents. We are now dropped another, we're now 48th in the world in terms of longevity. Our longevity markers are the lowest in the world. It's terrible. We have the highest neonate death rate as well, with the lowest survival, pre or natal survival. So we have a lot we could learn, and I think pharmacists can be instrumental in this. Does any are the participants allowed to ask questions?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Nora. How are you?
Hi.
Hi there.
Any comments, anything? Ben has spoke with us before, and he's very much along these lines and understands this. And
Yeah, I have a compounding pharmacy, and I'm a nutritionist also. And I went through the functional medicine programs. I just got frustrated like everybody else when managed care started taking over, insurance companies took over. I just stepped out of it. And I was small store. I did have a full health food store with food up until it that got popular and we started seeing regular grocery selling organic food. I couldn't do it anymore. Couldn't compete. But I'm right now in the middle of writing my book, Ben's Self Nutritional Guideline. Excuse me. So I've been tied up. I've been working at it every hour, you know. So I'm on the same page with you, and I've had colleagues that do the same thing, and we share information. Yeah, I mostly do. Hormonal issues, my specialty ends up falling in my lap, thyroid, adrenal, and of course the female hormones, even some male. But occasionally I'll have patients with some compromised health issues, like you're talking about in the detox area, which is, you know, it's difficult to try to get them to understand just what's happened, you know. I do some simple functional tests and they think it's magic, you know, they're feeling better. The chapter I'm writing right now, my book is breathing, just to learn how to breathe. And most people don't, you know. And
Did you read the book Breath?
which one is that? I don't
It's
think
kind of
so.
the Bible on breath right now. It's got that a full history. Yeah, a lot of the breath research that's out there. You might love it.
Yeah, I have 20 books here on breathing and yoga and chakras, and I'm a shaman also, so I'm in, you know, into that area of it. So, and then of course, you know, I'll look that up because that would help me. I like to put quotes on every segment, you know, from different
Yeah,
areas.
it's a very profound book. I too have read a lot about breath and practice yoga. My book is Learning to Thrive in a Toxic World and the Impact of Clinical Endocrinology and BHRT.
Right.
So the first four chapters are the state of our health and how we got here. And the next ones are what we can do about it. And then it starts, delving into the endocrinology part. That one of my favorite parts is I wrote about the chakras and the role of hormones in that. It's something that came to me in a meditation. You might take a look at it because it would be great if you see what you think about that.
Sure. Yeah, I
But
will.
if I came to you and you helped me, I would call you Santa Claus.
Yeah, I know. I get that all the time.
I know. I'm sure
Yeah.
you do. But Santa is a giver of gifts, so
That's right.
that's right.
That's what I
Gift of.
try to do, you know, try to help out.
Are there any other questions?
Where are you located? Do you have an email?
I do have an email. I'm located in Kansas City.
Okay.
On the Kansas side of Kansas City. My email is Lisa at, so it's Lisa at KC for Kansas City Holistic.com.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And the pharmacy website is O'Brien, OBRIENRX.com.
Mine is
The book,
Brian. lionalliance.com.
Okay.
So you can see what we do.
Okay. So pharmacists have always been, I think one of the problems that I have and have been faced with is I have a lot of physicians and nurse practitioners and stuff who completed the A4M courses and whatnot, which was a spinoff of ACAM, which was a spinoff of the original American Holistic Medical Association. And their complete frustration with the program in that it still has an allopathic approach. And if the tit for tat type therapy doesn't work, you know, you use curcumin and whatnot to replace ibuprofen, they don't know what to do because they still haven't been taught the biochemistry of health. And that is most succinctly taught at the CNCB, the Clinical Nutrition Program. The organization for that is the IAACN, International and American Associations of Clinical Nutritionists. It was the first clinical nutrition program out there. It's the longest lived. It is the most in-depth. It gave, you know, if you know James LaValle, it gave him his start. It gave Rakowski his start, Russell Jaffe, so many of these people are products of that program. It's the most in-depth biochemical program that is out there today. So if you're looking to get more education, it's the toughest. It's not a weekend thing where you pay some money and you come out with a certification. It's a tough course.
I know all about it.
But
yeah,
the course they have now isn't as tough as the one I went through. And it's also not as tough as the new one that's coming out. So, but our real education, I think, comes from the symposiums, the chemistry and everything that is presented there. Everything from the deficiencies and the problems that 5G and EMFs do to our biosystem is taught there, and how we can put that back together for people and help make people resilient. We're not going to get rid of cell phones and technology, but we can. Yes, I could get rid of the music here. But we can have it not cause the amount of cancers and, you know, epigenetic changes that we're seeing. I don't know how many of you know, we're only 5, maybe in some walks, 10%, but generally speaking, 5% are genetics. We're 95% lifestyle. Genetics loads the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger. If that's a new concept to you, I can use myself as an example. I have 100% of the genes, both sides, for hemochromatosis as well as pernicious anemia. But I didn't turn on the hemochromatosis because I don't eat heme iron, which is the most absorbable iron, and it's the most oxidative. So I'm vegan, I don't eat that. And had I eaten that, I would be like everyone else in my family who does. So it's an interesting thing. It helps us, epigenetics helps us understand why everybody in the family has diabetes and you don't have it because you did not adopt the same lifestyle, the same thought patterns, the same recipes, or you made them healthier. You never were a milk drinker, didn't care for dairy, didn't get along with it, which is to this day, the number one cause of type 2 diabetes. 3 ounces of chicken breast a day give you 51 times the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. The beat goes on. It's the most carcinogenic diet you can have is the keto or the high protein diets. The more protein we eat, the less bone structure we have. And the worldwide literature on this is profound, absolutely profound. And for 45 years, that's the way I've turned around those things in other, patients and so forth. We, if you were, if you wonder if there is a market for this, because you maybe you're not like this gentleman seasoned in it, if you're wondering if there's a market, I'm booked out 6 months. I have four other pharmacists that do this work. I also have a pharmacy technician that has a degree in foods and nutrition. And so she does a secondary consult about, changing your diet and, being educated along those lines. We do have a, we have 13 pharmacists here and about that many technicians. As part of our weekly meetings, we do a clinical corner whereby we update the entire staff on, oh, certain supplements, the maybe it's the role of vitamin C, maybe it's why did we change from this nitric oxide support product to a different product? What's happened? The supplement industry is changing rapidly. There's a huge move. I go to DC twice a year. I'm leaving in May to go again to fight for supplementation and homeopathy. There's a move right now to take 4,700 supplements off the market by the basically the drug industry, the FDA arm. But there is definitely a market for this. People want to get healthier, and they've either come to a point where they can no longer tolerate the medications they're on, or they have no faith in them. The average cost 6 years ago of a brand new drug coming to the market was $2,000. It has now just surpassed over $200,000 per drug, new drug that comes to the market. And I think the American public has just, at least a segment of the American public has come to their wits' end with all of that. The drugs that come out are very powerful, as you all know, and the side effects are huge, absolutely huge on them. I don't know how many necrotic legs you've seen from Humira jabs or whatever, but there comes to a point in time where that isn't maintenance. That isn't maintenance. You can reverse those diseases. They seroconvert. The ANAs go down. The SED rates go down. They go back into normal range. And then they don't even need the therapeutic supplements for that same condition. They weren't born there. The genetics were there, or they've damaged more genes, they've damaged more DNA, and now they're going to be the first of their family line that has, say, rheumatoid arthritis. But we have people that have been medication-free and seroconverted 35, 40 years ago and haven't gone back. The people who have gone back into pain and into rheumatoid arthritis are those who inadvertently got back on dairy, like a whey protein drink. They went to see a personal trainer, and they all think they know nutrition, and they put them on a whey protein drink, and the next thing you know, they're back in with their little hands aching and crippling. And I'll stand out front because I'm like, okay, what happened? Did you know how 70 to 90% of autoimmune diseases are triggered by a trauma, physical or mental or emotional trauma? So I go, what happened? What's as a stress gone up, or even a car accident, heaven forbid, what happened? And they don't know. And then I'll keep asking questions, and that's how it. And now I go straight to the personal trainer thing. I just go, have you started a new program at the gym? And they forgot, whey is one of the milk proteins that is so toxic to a human being, especially an adult.
We get a lot of clients that have gone to see a health coach. So they get so screwed up, you know, in a few weeks, they're right back in seeing us. But it's a shame, you know, that the government is all worried about supplements. They should be going after pharmaceutical industry. It's terrible.
Well, the government is the pharmaceutical. I mean, that's agency capture.
Yeah.
So the FDA is the action arm of the drug industry. They're
yeah.
all, I mean, you can look the current ones up. It's been published in the USD, or excuse me, the USA Today multiple times, every member of the FDA and their ties to the drug industry. Look who President Trump put in as head of the FDA. So yeah, it's the stuff that you know, Dr. Fauci pulled. So we are up against a lot, and I think people also don't believe there's enough on the internet that they don't believe anymore that we don't know the cause of cancer. Their doctors literally still telling them we don't know what causes GERD, we don't know what causes cancer. Well, what if I change my diet? Will that help my Crohn's disease? And the GI docs will look them straight in the eye and say that makes no difference.
No,
what so what yeah that couldn't affect your tummy or your gut or anything. It's just, and people are too smart for that now.
Yeah.
They still look to pharmacists for true and more complete and more objective information. They still look to us, and we can use that to their benefit, to their highest and best good, by expanding our education a bit. And it's very fun. It's very fun work. As I said, it's so gratifying to see someone not need these expensive drugs, or a cardiac patient to get out of the lazy boy recliner, because as you all know, cardiac patients are the most overeducated subgroup of people. So they're on multiple drugs and too high of a dose in most cases. And those doses can be lessened and or eliminated with clinical nutrition and nutritional medicine.
Yep.
So it's a wonderful thing. We do IV nutrition and compound that and send that to, whether it's to clinics to administer or to people's homes, and they have a nurse or home health come, you know, and these are liter bags that, and we do some half liter bags, but liter bags that have very high doses of nutrients, and not just vitamin C. That's a cardinal rule of clinical nutrition, is you don't give one nutrient by itself. You don't ever do that, because you spin the biochemistry off in a way that you're not looking to do. So we want to look at nutrition and as the packages that they come in as food. So an example of that is, there was a landmark study, y'all probably heard of it, about giving beta carotene to smokers to see if it would diminish their risk of getting lung cancer. And I think clinical nutritionists knew that it was going to cause much greater harm, and it did. People got more lung cancer. And the reason for that is beta carotene will turn into a superoxide from the oxidative substances, including carbon monoxide, that's in cigarette smoke. And then, so what happens in nature is another fat soluble called vitamin E comes along, and it will neutralize that. It will donate an electron. If that isn't enough, selenium comes along behind vitamin E, and it donates another electron. So now you have a neutralized substance with which the body can work and get rid of its poison. So had they done that, and that's how beta carotene travels in nature. You can't pick a carrot out of the ground and just get beta carotene. You're going to get all those other nutrients alongside it. So those packages help protect this biochemistry.
So you're having fun.
So, I'm sorry, say that again.
So you're having fun.
I am having fun.
I
just turned 70. I just turned 70. I've got to retire at some point. I have a team, you know, my daughter, but I still have the next book is Learning to Heal in a Toxic World. I still have that. And the work on the governmental affairs committee for Kansas Pharmacists Association for Kansas. And we help with the writing the bills and so forth. One that's going to pass in Kansas, I think, that we've put together and other states are looking at that is kind of a health freedom bill where you can refuse treatment. You don't have to have cancer treatment if you don't want to. You don't have to have a vaccine if you don't want to, if it's between you and your physician. And that there can be no repercussions from your place of work or your school, your place of education. If it is a Kansas State school, you cannot, you know, deny an education to someone who doesn't want to take Humira or something for their, and which they're trying to get through too, is to have mandated treatment for children and adolescents that have autoimmune diseases. And they're still under their parents' care. I don't know how you all feel about that, but I don't feel like the government should be making those decisions for my patients. I think that's between the parents and maybe the adolescent has an opinion about it too, and maybe the physician, and it should be with full informed consent. So that's the other thing is demanding informed consent, which was abandoned for the Emergency Act for COVID. So we have some work to do, and pharmacists can be influential. As I say, I'm in DC twice a year. Our hero in health is my senator, Robert Marshall. He was here last week in the pharmacy. He's the OBGYN in Western Kansas who helped get the letter put together for the Senate to help explain to the Senate that the NASM report for bioidentical hormones was nothing but a lie. And it's the Senate only that can control the FDA. So our work has been heavy there. And I've spent a fortune supporting not only our representatives of Kansas, but in the Carolinas everywhere to and Congress persons who are friends to compounding and think that compounding is an important resource for Americans, that customized medication, customized nutrition are important resources for Americans, and they have a right to have access to those modalities. What do you all think?
Has to be fun. You have to spend a little money there and get in the office. I've done that many times when I was with IACP for a while. We'd have our Washington lobbying.
Yeah.
I was always there.
And that's who I work with now, only it's APC.
APC, you know, yeah.
I was IACP, now I'm APC.
Yeah, I am too. I had to change my cars.
Yeah, to change everything, right? I know. I'm on the foundation committee and the board, and the education committee for APC. So, yeah, that's who we're working with is those lobbyists, and then the various legislators that will come see us, but we're up there twice a year. My husband is a retired colonel with the Air Force, but he was chief of aerospace medicine. He's a physician, but his PhD is in soil biophysics. So
okay.
He was an agronomist that travels the world teaching farmers, growers, how to grow crops without chemicals and to get the bricks up, to get the nutrient density up so that the plagues of agriculture don't attack those. You know, it's like our immune system. So if you cut the apple open, it should stay white for a couple of days if it has enough nutrients and antioxidants. If it turns brown before your eyes, before you get to the end of the apple, you have a low nutrient, low bricks apple whose tree is very susceptible to disease. So he goes around lecturing that. I bring him up because he travels with me to the FDA and to the legislators to on behalf of compounding, because he's a big user of compounder medications and a huge believer in bioidentical hormones. So we need more physicians like that. If y'all can get your physicians yourselves, if you support and are a member of APC or a pharmacy member of APC, that money, that, and you can earmark all your money for legislative influence if you want, or other programs that APC might have that interest you. But any physicians and people that you can get together and attend Compounders of Capitol Hill or the ACT thing through PCCA. There's several things going around. We can go within NACP or NCPA. What is it? NCPA? It, National Community Pharmacy Association, NCPA, has a program as well whereby all these pharmacists gather on Capitol Hill and we storm the hill.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit, you kind of feel like you're on you got a lot of adrenaline going those few days, but it's good. But I've hosted coffees and cocktail parties and stuff for the various senators and congressmen, and it does pay off. We do get their ear, and they had no idea what compounding pharmacists do and that there's an, and that there is a need for it. So, right. Yeah. Does anybody else have questions about, or is there anything else you want me to address regarding clinical nutrition and pharmacy training? Or
are you seeing an increase in clinical nutrition within pharmacists? Is there a big interest?
There is. They used to all come to the IAACN, and a lot of them have gone through these programs that are less involved, maybe more expensive, but less involved, and kind of taken this shortcut. And again, they end up, once they get out and they try to do it, they realize how limited their education is. So the IAACN is cranking out some highly educated pharmacists. It's gone up and down. What I thought Santa Claus was going to say is he gets frustrated with, you know, there's the people who want to get well, that you're going to run into this, where they want to get well, they spend the money on a consultation fee for you, they just don't want to make all the changes
mm-hmm.
that are necessary. When you're going into prevention, you can make those changes more slowly. If you're at crisis mode, which a lot of people wait for crisis mode, that first heart attack or their cancer diagnosis, or the bipolar diagnosis, or now they've got Parkinson's, which we've also, I reversed Parkinson's in my mother. She just came in here during this talk. She's 91 years old and plays tennis 3 or 4 days a week, with hardcore tennis with 40 and 50 year olds. If you reverse those, you know, diseases, the word's going to get out. Those people have to jump into the program with both feet and hit the ground running. And they need a lot of support many times to accomplish this. But once they adopt this lifestyle, it's just what they do. And it's so much easier now than when I raised my children. We have food substitutes today that are absolutely delicious and that we have vetted, and we pass those, that we have a handout made with those logos and, you know, ingredients and all of that. The substitutes back in the 70s and 80s were just awful. They tasted terrible. We'd rather do without than use those. BioLife makes the most incredible Parmesan cheese, quote unquote. And it is a cultured product. It's made exactly like cheese is, but it just doesn't start on cow's milk or goat milk. So they, you know, various companies, Kite Hills, for instance, their cream cheese, their products are almond based. Other ones use combinations of things. Miyoko's uses a lot of oat milk and some coconut milk base. Their butter is phenomenal. It's not like a margarine. The hydrogenation only comes from how much coconut they add. And if it sits at room temperature, it for very long, or just slightly, you know, 78, it's going to start melting. So that's not, you know, earth balance, which is really basically a margarine.
Right.
So these things are available now for people to transition that weren't there. Field roast, even though they use non-GMO wheat as a basis, well, guess what? The people with gluten allergies and even celiac can eat that stuff. It's like sourdough bread. The gluten is broken down into the amino acids by the bacteria, and it's no longer recognized as gluten. It is vital gluten. Gluten has always been called vital gluten because the amino acids from those grains are, after the first 18 million years of our existence, we started eating the grains and the testosterone part of the plant, the leaves, to develop the frontal part of our brains. They had the fat soluble vitamins and the amino acids we needed. So it's like the barley men in the times of the gladiators in Rome. All of Rome was vegan. They ate beans, grains, olives, a lot of fruit, all the fruits and vegetables. So the barley men, when they've dug up those mass graves, have more bone density. They have stronger tendons and ligaments that are still able to be measured than our guys today that can run 150 miles at a drop of a hat. So, you know, these lifestyle changes improve everyone's health, but it's the antithesis of the American culture and of industry advertising. The egg industry has been sued the most times for lying about the goodness of eating an egg. So when you learn, if you don't already know what TMA, trimethylamine, is, and where that's oxidized into TMAO in the liver, that only happens in meat, dairy, and egg eaters. Vegans don't have that. We can't even make it. We don't have the gut bacteria to make the TMA in the first place. TMA is made from choline and carnitine because we aren't meant to eat those. We crank out L-carnitine all day long. The average American male eats 155% of the recommended protein intake by the FDA. The average female, 144%. And those aren't the people on a keto or a high protein or a bodybuilding diet. Those are just people not even trying to eat protein, but what we consume in the United States. Another way to look at that is we eat 6 to 8 times more animal protein than any country in the world and 10 times more dairy. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Sure.
If someone wanted more information regarding certification, where do you recommend them to go?
They can go to IAACN.org. You have to have a fair amount of, you know, some recommendations and stuff and letters. I'm happy to do what I can to support new candidates that are interested. And right now, unlike when I went through the program, it's an all online course, and it does need updating, but you will still learn more and more accurately than any of the other programs out there. And I know that because I'm on the education committees of these other programs, and they're just skimming the surface and still buying into industry mantra. Mm-hmm. And you don't want that. You want to know biochemically what's going on. Patients are sophisticated today. I will show you what I show them when they come in my office. And I usually have a scribe in here with me to at each appointment. So they help me unfurl this.
Oh, I've got one of the, I love that thing.
This is one half of the biochemical reactions in the human body. If I hold it at chest level, it goes to my feet. There's another piece of paper like that. And then I pick certain reactions and I show them I show them what those chemical reactions are doing, and that this is why we eat. These are our marching orders. My recommendations are based on this science that never changes. Nobody comes along with an eraser and says, oh, you know, we shouldn't eat beans because of lectins and all the crap you hear out there. When lectins are life-giving substances that are in our tomatoes and everything. And you have to know where the garbage came from, the study they were talking about. Well, that's what pharmacists do the best. Mm-hmm. So I show them that and I say, the only thing is that this grows. So when I first came out of school, this all fit on this one piece of paper. Now there's two of them. So every 4 or 5 years, I have to get a new set. And it doesn't contradict itself. There is no place on there for us to eat dairy off of another species that has the opposite composition of humans. So we can't ever digest it. And especially into adulthood. If there's no place on there for us to eat animal proteins, I don't care if they come from an egg or what, without making uric acid, ammonia, and giving off purines. So we make poison out of breaking those carbon bonds. With plant proteins, they're small chained amino acids, and they're sequenced like humans are. So all we have to do is pop those together to build an enzyme or an eyelash. But we can't use any animal proteins as they exist, not a one of them. They have to be broken into their amino acids. So an interesting several studies that were done, repeated and repeated, was they radioactively tagged in bodybuilders the proteins in their vegetables and their meat that they were eating. What they found out is what got incorporated into those massive muscles was not the meat proteins, it was instead the vegetable ones. Because we don't make our 15 quarts of gastric fluids anymore to digest that much. We don't make, I mean, look at the people on Prilosec. Do you think they're getting cleaning amino acids out of their meat protein? But the plants come ready to go and therefore take less energy. And that energy can be used for everyday living or for healing and recovery. So it's so much easier, you know, on the body. So to me, the biochemical buck stops there. You can have all the theories you want, but if it interrupts those reactions or it downregulates them, Lisa's not going to be in favor of it. That's what I base my recommendations on. And they soon realize that their physicians, their nurse practitioners, they can't argue with that. Because all they've got is crazy things that they called studies that were funded by the various industries. And that's what dietitians are taught.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not looking to be educated by Cargill and Big Pharma, which Monsanto is Big Pharma. So we're not, we're looking to do biochemistry. And so the IAACN is a biochemically based nutritional program. And that's why I think another reason I think pharmacists are the most poised for this. When I go out to teach this to physicians, I really have to slow it down. And I'm not going to say dumb it down, but I do have to slow it down and give it to them in smaller chunks. And the pharmacy groups are like, oh my gosh, I remember that. I remember this and that, you know. And they may not have spent a lot of time with the concepts, but they understand them. They grasp it. It doesn't take them long to start saying, well, what does this mean in terms of my health and in terms of helping my patient restore their lab values?
Ooh, it's a lot. Very rewarding, I tell you that. I think we are running out of time.
Yep.
If anyone needs to get a hold of you, are you okay with email?
Yes. I'm not in town next week, but yes, I'm happy to help anyone or chat with anyone. It's probably best to email me first to let me know if you're wanting to call me, because if I don't recognize the number, I might not answer it. Okay. There's a lot of spam going on now that I didn't used to have.
Yes.
But and, I'd be happy to share what I can to help people.
And then I have went through the program as well, and I am happy to share my experience, something I do recommend. I do not regret it. It's a great addition to the pharmacy education. So I am happy to give you my feedback as well.
Are you coming to the conference this year?
I sure am. Yes, I have my form to fill out.
Okay. I'm hoping to have Michael Greger as our keynote, but he quits speaking. He quits giving talks after June. So I'm really, he hasn't told me no yet. He's saying definite maybe. I said, look, these are nutritionists. It's not just a layperson group or doctors. These are nutritionists. They can do something with this information.
Yes.
So Russell Jaffrey is probably going to teach a pre-course. And the conference this year is going to be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. The pre-conference, if it all works out, will be Sunday.
And we should mention that. That's a, you do not have to be a member or have a be. I mean, anyone can go, and you do get pharmacy credit for that. So, and it's all on their website.
At this conference, you're going to learn a lot about longevity markers. I don't know if any of you know what spermidine is, for instance, or different things like that. Longevity markers and how meat, dairy, and eggs lower all of them. And they raise all the inflammatory markers. Dairy raises every inflammatory marker we've ever been able to measure. And it raises substance P. So people feel more pain than the tissue warrants. And I go over that in great detail on the in my chapter in the book called Dairy, the Great American Way, or art, get it? Anyway, so yeah, that there's, I think it's gonna be a good conference. I'm gonna be talking with Dr. Miletus. I don't know if you've heard him speak. He and I are playing phone tag. He's a naturopath from back east and a great educator. And so I'm hoping to have him. So anyway, it's going to be fun.
Great. It is always is very educational. Learn a lot. Well, thank you as always. I know you're a busy woman. So thank you for joining us.
As are all of you. My pleasure, truly. I give you all hugs.
Thank you.
And love. And wish you well.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.